It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Happy National Signing Day Eve here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Christmas in February for college football fans that follow recruiting. And if you're a college football fan and you don't,
are you really a fan?
You're missing out.
I'm not sure if you're really that true of a fan if you don't follow the recruiting. Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. You can join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email the show at radio@bleedtechblue.com, or you can tweet us with the hashtag BTBRadio, and we'll get to your questions on the air.
Probably the biggest storyline today, Kendrick Jackson deciding to ultimately sign with Arkansas out of Haynesville. I don't think it's a shocker to anybody. Tech was very close. I will say that much. Everybody in Haynesville that I've talked to says Tech was really, really close. Arkansas will never report that. I said that last Tuesday night. If Tech ended up getting him, Arkansas was going to spin it and say that they didn't want him.
Oh, no doubt. And we've seen it before with players over the years from West Monroe, Junction City. You know, local area kids that Arkansas comes in on, maybe later, maybe not so late. And it's almost always the same thing. The player has friends here or family here or a family connection. They feel drawn to Tech, but they feel that draw to play in the SEC too. And most of the time, 9 times out of 10, they're going to go to Arkansas, and that's just the way it is.
Unfortunately for Louisiana Tech, but you're right. It's going to pan out that way almost every time. This morning, TJ King, I mentioned him yesterday, just in the previous show on the Sports Company. That Tech had lost him earlier in the year, but I still thought that Tech was had a possibility to pick up his signature tomorrow. He messaged me on Twitter out of the blue. I hadn't heard from him for a couple of weeks and said that he would sign with Tech. So there's that.
Yeah, you just never know sometimes. I mean, that one, you know, a day ago I was feeling better about Jackson and less good about King, and then boom, you know, the news hits on both of them. And so –
and then the other two that Tech's still waiting on, Kevin Dotson out of Plaquemine, down in the Baton Rouge, south of Baton Rouge on the river. I don't think he's ever made a decision. He's currently committed to the ULL. I would call him a soft commit to ULL, and I expect him to sign with ULL tomorrow.
So he and Courtney Wallace from Neville both visited this past weekend. Tech needed an offensive lineman after Cameron Eloff switched to Houston. Dotson was, I guess, the next guy on their list. And really, in the last week, ULL seen Dotson visit Tech. And now they just found out today Marcus Keyes, another one of their offensive guard commitments, just announced he's going to delay signing because Oklahoma State wants him to come visit. So I'm sure they're trying to pull out all the stops to keep Dotson because they know they're probably losing Keyes.
Hey, sure. And then you look at Wallace down the road. He hasn't formally said he's not signing with Texas Tech, who he is committed to, but he visited Louisiana Tech the last weekend. ULM wanted him to visit this weekend. I think it would probably be fair to say that he's down to ULM and Louisiana Tech. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean,
his dad played at Louisiana Tech. There's an immediate connection there. It'd be hard to believe that Tech doesn't get a signature. And those ULM people that are listening right now are thinking, oh, there goes that Tech homer.
Yeah, and I think it will be one of the two. I think you're right. Just like, you know, he committed to Texas Tech. Lubbock's a little far away. Just like Kendrick Jackson was committed to Arizona. And then when it really gets time,
okay, to the nitty gritty,
it's fun to talk about it with your other Louisiana recruits that are going out there. Hey, you know, the Louisiana boys, we're going out to Arizona. It's going to be great. when it gets time to go, you want to stay closer to home. So Kendrick chose between Tech and Arkansas. Courtney's probably choosing between ULM and Tech. You know, does he want to stay in his hometown? Does he want to go right down the road?
And
where
does
his
he
dad
want to play with his teammate? He's got a teammate that's committed to the Warhawks. So, and Donald Lewis. So,
you know, so he's got two good options here locally, and I feel the best about King. Like you mentioned, he reached out to you and said, "Hey, I'm coming." You know, I probably feel the second best about Wallace and then Dotson, just because he's been so quiet, I'd say third. But, you know, Tech's – I get less worried every year about does Tech have 25, because every year they end up with 21, 22, 23.
He used to be obsessed with that.
And it's like, you know, well, if they're not going to get these guys, well, who are they going to get to replace them? But there's always somebody that falls through the cracks, and then there's always these fifth-year transfers or a junior college player that ends up not signing with the school he was committed to.
And as I was saying on the sports company, Tech had so much success with the fifth-year transfers as opposed to even the junior college players. Tech has never, throughout the years, had a lot of success, a huge amount of success with junior college transfers.
Well, they've had some huge hits, but for every
they've
huge hit...
They've had lots of huge misses.
Yeah, for every huge hit, there's at least two huge misses. So you might get, you know, Miles White and...
Quentin Patton.
And Quentin Patton, but then you're going to sign... I remember there were years under Big Nail, they'd sign four or five offensive linemen, four or five DBs, and maybe one or two would pan out. And there's just so many misses and because it was a gamble. So it can work, but... This is so much needed, and that's what I wanted to get into. I don't know if you want me to talk about it now. Just the number of high school – I mean, they've got 22 high school kids committed. Could end up signing 23, 24. You know, we'll see. And they've needed this class for so many years because for so long we've seen just under Big Nail and then Dykes the huge number of junior college players that were signed. And then under Dooley, they had this so many non-qualifiers or partial qualifiers signed, that kids that didn't make it on campus. They've never had that much depth, and every year you're looking at the spring depth chart and it's like, okay, well, there's a kid that's been on the practice team for 3 years, or a junior college kid that just got here, or a freshman that's just getting here. And at all these positions, there's no experience. So, and they're even looking into that this coming year. A lot of I'm hearing myself talk. It's throwing me off. calling you out. I'm sorry.
That's right.
So now, even this coming year, you look at the spring and they lose all three starting linebackers, and there's not a lot of linebacker depth. Who's going to start? Who's going to be the backup? They might be counting on some freshmen to be backups, like Quantum Moore at middle linebacker. Well, you get this class in here where you've got three or four guys at DB, three or four linebackers, two or three defensive linemen, on three wide receivers on down the line. Next spring, you won't have this problem. Well, which junior college transfer we're going to have to plug in, or do we need to go find a fifth-year transfer to plug a hole? Because, like Houston Base, we didn't have somebody. Now, well, which freshman is going to go out there, redshirt freshman or sophomore, is going to go out there in the spring and win the job over the other one? We've got competition now, so it's going to be so much better.
I'm with you 100%. I think that, as far as I know, they brought one junior college player in on a visit, and it was a just in case they didn't get King kind of situation. So, I mean, they're going to get King. And the junior college defensive end, Peter Baleo, was committed to Middle Tennessee, picked up a Nebraska offer late, and he's sticking with Middle Tennessee. I mean,
wow.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for Middle.
Exactly.
We've talked about this for the last few weeks, Jared and I especially, about the defensive backs, and that still rings true. They haven't lost any of those.
No, they haven't lost any of those, but also I think that adding T.J. King on the defensive line really makes the defensive line certainly more formidable than it was before. He's a surprise to me, honestly. I thought once
I'm with you. Yeah. He surprised me when he sent me the message.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that one. Pleasantly surprised, I should say. Of course, losing Jackson is tough. When you lose Jackson and then also you lost Eloff, you have to think that those two guys were kind of icing on the cake, so to speak. But with that being said, I still think that when you still have a kid like Freeman, who's coming to Tech, who had very good offers, who was really good for three seasons in high school, and then, you know, just coming off of an injury, maybe Freeman comes back and no one ever thinks twice again about Kendrick Jackson and where he went. Because Freeman has the talent to be able to play just as well in this system. Assuming that Louisiana Tech is able to keep Blake Baker running the same system that Diaz ran last year for the next, you know, 2 to 3 seasons at least, you'd like to think that Freeman, coming off that ACL injury healthy, certainly has an opportunity to be just who Jackson was going to be.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll continue talking about the standout commitments in this class for Louisiana Tech. And then we'll also, later in the show, go through, so far, the schedule of signees that we're expecting for Louisiana Tech tomorrow. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jonathan Ford, publisher and host here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
You're the publisher of Bleed Tech Blue Radio?
Yeah, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com.
There you know what I meant. Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. And you can join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to us at radio at BleedTechBlue.com, or you can tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll answer them on the air.
Jason and Jared, we were just talking about off the air about offensive line. And looking at the depth chart for next season, with Derek Edinburgh, the LSU transfer, able to play next year, Shane Carpenter coming off his redshirt year, so he'll be a redshirt freshman. Josh Robinson had a good final two games. Darryl Brown's back. Jens Danielson's back. All of those are tackles. Our tackles on paper. And then on the interior, Brunson's back. Mahaffey's back.
Wixon's
back.
And Robinson was a guard. He just played tackle out of necessity, so he's really versatile. Could play either one.
But then you look at the signing class. O'Shea Dugas at 6'5", 300 pounds. Devontae Lovett, he's listed at 6'4" here on Rivals. I'm pretty sure he's pretty close to 6'5", because pictures on his visit, he and Dugas are just as tall. So we'll call him 6'5", 310. He's heavier than Dugas. And then Ethan Reed, he's going to be an interior lineman. 6'4", let's call him 280, 290.
And then, of course, eventually you still got Rodriguez, who's going to play tight end before he eventually moves over to tackle at some point.
And he's up to 270.
And then the gray shirt from last year.
Deontay McCrady is huge.
Is enormous. And so you've got, really, if you count him in this signing class, you've got four offensive linemen that are at 1 year together. And then I guess Rodriguez and Carpenter will be 1 year ahead of them, theoretically, unless – Thinking all these guys are going to redshirt, which they probably will. But that's your next group of guys coming up, because there's a whole lot of juniors on the team this season coming up. A couple of seniors, a couple of sophomores. But for the most part, there's a bunch of juniors. So they'll be around for 2 years, and that'll kind of pave the way for these guys to redshirt and then maybe get a year of experience. And by year three, when they're sophomores, they're going to be the ones that are going to be counted on.
But we've been looking at Louisiana Tech for the last at least 3 or 4 years. They've been junior college heavy on the offensive line.
Yeah, a lot of those guys you just named. I mean, Wixon, Mahaffey, Danielson. A lot of those were junior college guys.
And then you go back to Oscar Johnson.
Trey Carter was a junior college guy.
Mitchell Bell.
Mitchell Bell. Because of the lack of high school recruiting at offensive line. You got three right here that are high school offensive linemen. If something happens and Dotson does sign with Louisiana Tech tomorrow, that's four. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, I mean, and they're all big dudes. I mean, it's not like you're getting any skinny kids that you're trying to grow into a lineman, and you're not getting any 6'2 guys. They're all 6'4 and above.
Jared started with talking about Donald Freeman at linebacker. I don't think enough can be said about the linebacker class here.
No, especially not considering that it's a position of need. And, you know, Tony Johnson played so much better than anyone expected last season. But outside of Johnson, Villamez, he played really well too. But you've got to replace him. And so you've got Nick Thomason,
Bofeet.
Bofeet. It feels like Bofeet has been here for forever.
But it's because he was a high school guy, and he redshirted.
He was a high school guy. He redshirted.
You want to feel like that. And it's like Hunter Lee.
And his brother was here for 6 years.
Yeah, and then Lyle, of course, was here for forever. And so, you know, same last name. But regardless, but you're talking about you had an opportunity to get Russell Ferris on the field last year. You have to think Russell Ferris will play into that that linebacker position group again this year. Quante Moore is going to be able to get on the field this year. And then you've got good linebackers coming in this class. And I think, really, Brandon Dermon was my kind of
surprise. He's your Cinderella.
He was my surprise pick, or who I think is going to end up having the best career that no one's really talking about right now. I think Brandon Dermon is going to play really well. Donald Freeman, very well by the time this
class.
You
got to think he's a redshirt
by the time. Yeah. Well, I'm going to assume, especially with the injury his senior year. But
he could be a gray shirt guy still.
Honestly believe that Donald Freeman could end up being the best player from this class.
It's very possible.
He shows the Ole Miss and Mississippi State offers, so, I mean, he has the talent that at least some SEC schools were recognizing.
And then Colin Scott had schools coming by the last 2 weeks just beating down his door trying to get him to come on visits, and he held firm to Louisiana Tech. I mean, Big 12s were coming around.
And that's a credit to Skip Holtz and his staff. I mean, they're not doing anything sneaky in recruiting. They're just being straight up. This is who we are, and we want you to be a part of it. And kids are buying into that. And then another thing they can sell is, hey, we will play you early. You know, a lot of times the philosophy has been, well, we're going to get all these kids in here redshirt, get them in the weight room, get them a year older, and then they'll have 4 more years to play. But you know, Skip was really smart in thinking, okay, we're going to have a lot of holes to fill next year, so let's play, Jared, you mentioned, at linebacker, Russell Ferris, but then they also, I mean, they played the cornerback from Evangel.
Cedric Cooper.
And then the safety.
Shaw.
Roland Dunn.
Cedric Cooper. They played the defensive end. So at least four, I might be missing somebody.
Kansi is who the defensive end was.
Kansi, I'm sorry. You know, they're playing these true freshmen out there. They're still redshirting several of them, but now these guys have experience. So when they come in here as sophomores, you're not counting on somebody that has not ever seen the field in a college football game. They've got a whole year of experience. So, and you see some of the bigger schools doing that sometimes. Hey, if you can play, we're going to put you out there. Even if they're not playing 80 snaps a game or 50 snaps a game, they might be playing 20 or 25, but they're getting some experience.
Well, then it's also to speak to that true freshman play, and you've got to look at, you know, how many carries Jared Kraft was able to get, and then Marcus Gaines at the beginning of the season, and then, of course, Marlon Watts ended up getting in on the offensive side. So, no, you're exactly right that there's certainly opportunity if you've got the talent to go ahead and come in and play immediately. I would be remiss when we talk about linebackers. I would be remiss not to mention Solomon Hunter is going to play next year. Kid 6'2", 220, 225, something like that.
I bet he might be 6'3". He's long.
He's got and he's added some width, some girth. But then also you have to think that most likely Lloyd Grogan's going to drop down and play that Terrell Pinson spot.
That was my next point. Lloyd Grogan likely to drop down in the box, especially when you look at the safety class. James Jackson's probably a safety. Darren Williams is a safety. Johnny Shaw is probably a safety. Ephraim Kitchen's a corner. Aaron Robertson's a corner. Trey Spencer, I think, is a corner.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of DBs in this class, and so then you look at if you're trying to play three linebackers at all next year, we start off the segment talking about linebackers. With experience, you've got Feet, Thomason, Ferris.
That's it.
Is that it? And C.J. Cleveland. I mean, who's
he's back.
He'll be a senior. So maybe four guys to fill three starting spots and three backups. So you've got to count on some freshmen.
And luckily, going back to linebacker, Brandon Dermon's an early enrollee.
Right. Brandon Dermon will be here for the entire spring.
He's done with high school.
So now you've got a choice between he or Quanta Moore. You know, at least there's some competition there. Or you can move somebody inside if they show the ability. I mean, I'm not so sure Russell Ferris couldn't play inside. I mean, but he could.
He's a thick son of a gun.
And then, you know, if you move Grogan up, he's competing with Cleveland on one side. You got Feet on the other. I mean, you got options. And you mentioned Solomon Hunter's had a year in the system.
And then you look offensively at this class outside of offensive line. At the skill positions, with Rashid Barnett from Laurelville down in South Louisiana, at 6'2", 175, a three-star prospect. Jamar Smith out of Meridian, Mississippi, expecting his signature tomorrow. Three-star quarterback, 6'2", 220, didn't throw a single interception his senior year.
Javonte Woodard out of Houghton, 6'2", 200, wide receiver.
Thick. Jamarian Johnson, 6'4", 215, probably 240 by the time he's done with college. Can run. Like, I stand by, he's the biggest sleeper in this class because nobody was after him. Tech knew what they had and stuck with it. And Tech was very fortunate that Ravel did not make it far in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they almost did.
And that's, you know, what stands out on the class.
And I'd be remiss not to talk about Dancy.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Dancy, the biggest steal of the class.
And what's funny, you know, there's only four, I guess, skill guys in this class. There's so many defensive players, and there's a few offensive linemen. You've only got four receivers/running backs. Three of them are fairly local within, you know, Houghton, Junction City, Ravel are all, what, 45, 50 minutes away. So they did a good job maybe not getting the quantity, but they got quality. And
Laroeville's in the Lafayette area, so they didn't go that far for him.
Yeah.
And then Meridian is not even that much further. So you're talking in less than a five-hour radius, they got every skill position player.
And, you know, you mentioned they might save a couple of spots for either a fifth-year transfer or somebody falls through the cracks. I think if they found a player that could make an impact on offense, I think that's the kind of position they might be looking for. They're not going to just grab a receiver or a running back. But if they found somebody that they said, hey, this kid can really play, you know, or a veteran that could help them, maybe even on the offensive line.
I could see offensive line.
That's really big.
The spots I could see: an offensive line, linebacker, defensive end,
defensive tackle, maybe
defensive tackle, possibly. So,
which is hard to believe with this as skewed towards defense as this class is, that we're still talking about possibly, you know, someone slipping through the cracks or a fifth year transfer being on the defensive side of the football.
It's because of how little the previous regime recruited defense.
They didn't care.
Well, they didn't,
and they still don't at Cal.
Yeah. Score more points.
Yeah, score more points. That's the defense, is just score more points. No, you're exactly right. And I think what Skip Holtz has proven in the little more than 2 years that he's been here is that he can recruit, whether it's coaches or players, he can recruit. He's bringing in coaches that you never would have thought would come to Louisiana Tech. He's getting players that are surprises as far as out of high school, but also with no one expected Cody Sokol, no one expected Houston Bates, no one expected Jeff Driscoll. Regardless of what side of the fence you are about Driscoll, he's the biggest surprise so far that I've seen, you know. And so there's certainly opportunity that Skip Holtz has got another card up his sleeve and he's just keeping it quiet. I mean, there very well could be another fifth-year transfer type player come in or someone just slip through the cracks.
The names I have so far, the times for signings: James Jackson in Haynesville, 8 o'clock in the morning. Jacquees Dancy, 10:30 a.m. They can begin faxing at 7 a.m. Colin Scott, Manville High School linebacker in Texas, 7 a.m. Rashid Bonnet, Laurelville, a 10 a.m. ceremony, but will be faxing about 8:30 a.m. Good old ceremonial signing of paper. Lots of that happening tomorrow. Aaron Robertson from over in Shreveport, 2:30 signing. Probably a ceremony. I bet his will be in before 2:30.
Oh, yeah.
Ethan Reed, 7 a.m. signing. Brandon Brinson, 1 p.m. ceremony, faxing at 7 a.m. Theron Williams, noon ceremony at St. Aug. I bet there's 19 kids signing from St. Aug this year. Noon ceremony, faxing at 7. O'Shea Dugas, same story. Noon ceremony, faxing at 7. Jordan Bradford, St. Stanislaus in South Mississippi, 7:30 a.m. is the plan. Javonte Woodard at Houghton, 2 p.m., but faxing before. He actually told me he's already signed the papers. 9:30 a.m., Brandon Derman. And then Dante Williams, 11 a.m. ceremony, signing at 7:20.
So precise.
So precise. That's what I've got so far. I'm sure we'll have some more as the night goes on.
What time will Kevontae Turpin be signing?
I just wonder.
I don't know. I just wonder. I just wondered.
I don't think you've got anything to wonder.
No.
He'll be wearing purple and black.
Probably so.
Now, at that same event, Courtney Wallace.
Right.
That's the one to watch.
And it may not, it'll be a much ado about nothing, I imagine. There's not a whole lot of anticipation.
A little bit.
Not a ton. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. Jonathan Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio here with you, along with Jared King, Jason Jones. Two more segments. Last segment, Louisiana Tech basketball. With this being signing day eve, more recruiting here in this segment. Jared, a couple sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to us at radio@bleedtechblue.com, or you can tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTBRadio, and we'll get to them on the air.
Got a question for you.
All right.
So I've already taken a shot at the Cajuns. You know, they're losing maybe up to two offensive linemen, but hopefully one to Louisiana Tech. We'll see. But do you remember when Tech went down there in the game and they started inviting a lot of Tech's recruits to that game, thinking they were about to put a butt whooping on Tech, and it kind of backfired? Well, when you were going through these guys and when they're signing, how many of these players are from the Lafayette, South Central Louisiana area? And then there's several also from Southeast Texas, right there close to Louisiana. You're talking about Laurelville, Houma, Lafayette, Northside. And then if they steal Dotson from them, I mean, that's four kids. And then all those Southeast Texas, you know, Ethan Reed from Orange, Texas, Colin Scott from Manvale, Johnny Shaw from Orange, Trey Spencer from Orange. I mean, Tech's going down there to Cajun country and getting a lot of players, a lot of talented players. Can't sit well with the Cajuns.
Oh, I'm sure that Hudspeth is roid raging about it right this second. And yes, I went there.
Yes.
But I'm also the guy that walked into his press conference after the game, and it was probably the most enjoyable press conference that I've ever been to in my entire life.
Oh, he was squirming. He didn't like us being in there.
He did not like us in there one bit. But it was a blast.
It was really fun. So, you know, I'm interested in Dotson for that reason. And if they lose, you know, their other offensive guard to Oklahoma State, it couldn't happen to a better guy.
That's also a fact. But you look at this class, I mean, we've been talking about it for weeks, that I think it's probably the best of the modern era of Louisiana Tech football. I mean, you look at back in the 70s when in Tech's heyday of football, and I don't know if it's better than that those days.
Well, I mean,
it's to be determined.
In the early 70s, when they were winning national championships, they were putting people in the NFL like nobody's business. I mean, you had it on the same team.
That's before there was 150 schools in Division I.
Yeah. You look, they're putting Hall of Famers like Fred Dean in the NFL, who's on the same team as like Roger Carr and Pat Tilley, who had long NFL careers. Terry Bradshaw was right before them, number one pick in the draft. I mean, Tech was getting some major talent back then. But even in the modern Division I era,
since 88,
you know, I think in the McNeil era from 99 to 06, you didn't see a class anywhere close. Before that, you know,
it's arguable.
They had a lot of talent in the early 90s, you know. Obviously, Willie Rofe, longtime NFL player, Doug Williams, Grant Williams played in the Super Bowl. But recently, the only one that compares to me is like that 09 class that was real heavy. Dooley's second class, real heavy on New Orleans players. He had a couple NFLers there, Jordan Mills and Jelly Bean Ellis.
And Eric Harper was in there, and the Raiders took a flyer on him.
I got a bone to pick. Why when we talk about football in the 90s for Louisiana Tech, does no one ever mention Matt Stover, who's could at one time was the most accurate kicker in NFL history, and then retired as like the third most accurate kicker in NFL history, and he's got two Super Bowl rings.
Says the small white guy.
Well, no, it's not that.
Stover, Boneal, Scobie, yeah.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm just picking on you.
Scobie.
You got a really good point.
Matt Stover, though, you know, he's in the Louisiana Tech Athletics Hall of Fame. He was.
Because we're talking about.
Not that that. Never mind.
We're talking about signing classes. Yeah, well, and typically in signing classes, the specialists aren't getting scholarships.
No, I agree. I understand. But whenever you were talking about players that Louisiana Tech has put into the NFL, and then you moved on to the 90s. And you skipped right over stuff. Yeah.
The most frustrating part whenever you talk about the 90s at Louisiana Tech football is that it stopped. Is that you had to wait until 2012.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, or 2011 for it to pick back up.
There was two eras there. The Joe Raymond piece era in the early 90s, they were really good. Then there was a few years in between that kind of slacked off. And then when Croton got there and in the very beginning of the Big Nail era where – when they won the WAC championship in 01, but then in 99 they won 8 games, in 97 they won 9. You're beating Alabama twice, you're beating Cal. Very competitive. If they lost, they were still putting up 100 million yards and 50 points to the Nebraskas and Auburns and Miamis of the world. Luke McCown, freshman, throwing 400, 500, whatever yards. They were fun, but then from 02 until who knows when,
2012,
it was quite miserable sometimes.
Well, what year was the Independence Bowl? 2009, is that what that was?
Yeah.
With Dooley. So I mean, you had that one flash in the pan.
Yeah, and you know, in 2011 they went where to the Poinsettia Bowl.
Yeah.
So it got better after Dooley got here, but yeah, from like 02 to 08, that was really miserable,
depressing.
One decent 7-win year. With Matt Kubik at quarterback.
That's probably the most, I mean, it's.
Your highlights of that whole decade were beating Fresno twice and they were ranked.
Yep. I have a friend that just moved to Fresno and I said, I have no love lost with those folks. Good old, he went from Covington, Louisiana to Fresno, California.
Wow. The Valley.
The Valley. He actually asked me, he goes, what is that green V on their helmets? And I said, believe it or not, it stands for the Fertile Valley. He said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, nope. That's it. But you look at this, go back to this class. Who's your second surprise? Who you expect to surprise the second most? Since we did the first most a couple of weeks ago.
What do you mean, like, as far as unexpected signing, or just who's going to be the best player?
Who's going to be the best player? Have the longest career.
Give him a grade. Jason.
I mean, last time I was here, I talked about Emmanuel Turner on defense. I mean, I think by year two, he's starting. He could start for 3 years. You know, unless he gets stuck behind Canty, where if he redshirts, he'll start for 2 years. You know, so I think that's one. And then on offense, I mean, Rashid Barnett, I mean, this guy's a pretty big-time recruit. I wouldn't say it's a surprise. I mean, he's a three-star kid, but, I mean, I think he might be the most – I think we're all expecting Dancy to be good, but Barnett could be just as good.
And then also we'll come back to you, a grade of the class 8F. I'll jump in since it was my idea, and I halfway have thought about it, but not truly thought about it. I really think LaDante Davenport may be that next guy. We've got him listed at 254. The guy's 280. I mean,
so he's definitely going to play inside. I was going to ask y'all earlier, what about Jordan Bradford? He's like 270 already. Do you think he'll end up being inside?
Yeah, he's a tackle. He's a monster. He's hard to block. So
there might not be a 320-pound nose guard in this class unless they get Courtney Wallace. But they've got two pretty good sized tackles.
That's how I feel. And I'll go ahead and give a grade. I don't ever like giving A pluses because you always think, well, what could have been? You could have finished with Kendrick Jackson. And gotten those, and yeah, you're looking at an A plus. I'm going to give it an A minus, though. I mean, it's a really good class. I can't think of a position that is really lacking in this class, and that's not something we've said in the recent past.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say A minus. They started out early, getting all the commitments early. They held on to 90% of them. The two that they did lose, or three that they did lose, they got two back, looks like, in Kitchens and King. So you lose Eloff, but you might replace him with a Courtney Wallace or Kevin Dotson or both. So, I mean, that's an A-minus to a solid A. And the only thing that would have put it over the top is if they hadn't have lost Eloff, or if they would have added Jackson. And, you know, I mean, you're not going to win every single recruiting battle. You got to lose somebody.
I'm going to take O'Shea Dugas, that offensive line.
Here's Aaron Dietrich saying, dogs are getting Wallace.
Sweet.
So there's your nose tackle. Sorry about that.
So Courtney Wallace out of Neville.
Yep.
Which is really your biggest defensive lineman come in and play, you know, the D-tackle position. Regardless, I think O'Shea Dugas is that guy for me, which may not be that much of a stretch, but you got to look at a kid who's 6'5", 290 pounds as a senior in high school, and you got to think that Kurt Hester be able to do a lot with that frame and could come in, and as we mentioned earlier, to an offensive line that's going to a team that's allowing freshmen to play and play in pretty early, and then you've got an offensive line that's definitely going to be young next year, will be young the year after that. You have to think O'Shea Dugas has an opportunity to start for 3 years on this team and be really a staple at either tackle position.
Yeah, I think you're right. And just talking about starting for 3 years, I mean, that group of third-year sophomores, Dugas, Reed, Lovett, and then McCready, and then you might have a junior at tackling Carpenter. I mean, you could have five kids that are all 320-plus, 6'4-plus. That could, if those kids stay healthy and work hard, and you talked about Hester in the weight room, they could be monsters.
Yeah, no doubt about it, absolutely. And these kids have frames. You know, I was looking today at just some of the other Rivals 100, and a lot of the difference in some of these offensive linemen and defensive line commits that are at the, I would say, lower tier Power 5 schools, a lot of those guys are the 6'4", 6'5", 310-pounders, 325-pounders. And the difference between the guys that Tech is getting and the guys that those are getting is about 40 pounds. You're looking at Tech getting a guy who's 6'4", 280, like Lovett, or 6'4", 275, like Reed. But Dugas really has an opportunity to have the body of one of these Power 5 offensive linemen.
Oh, no doubt. And you saw, I mean, the success Tech's had at offensive line is typically those big road grader types. I mean, Mitchell Bell at right tackle was pretty good, especially his junior year. Jordan Mills was good, went to the NFL. Big Oscar Johnson was massive. And
Matt Broha was another guy who was a really big guy, just a massive body.
Yeah, and, you know, Tech's getting some of these kids that are – I mean, Ellis was an offensive line – Justin Ellis was an offensive line recruit, and I remember asking him – the week after signing day, did they talk to you about moving to defense? Because everybody saw it. He could be a 330-pound nose guard and be unblockable, and he is. And he made it to the NFL. Tech's getting these NFL-sized guys now. They're not having to settle for the 260-pound tackle,
right,
or the undersized linebacker that they're going to have to try to grow into a position. I mean, they're getting the size and the athleticism, and that's the key. You got to get the size with the ability to carry it and move around, and they're getting some of those guys now.
And you look at the young offensive linemen they've got, and then all of these high school additions. I think long ago are the days whenever you had to move a guy like Vince Kano from defensive line to offensive line just to try to find somebody.
Or really from offensive line to defensive line to offensive line.
Right, yeah. To try to find somebody to put in that spot so you can put five offensive linemen out on the field.
And I think that's where the hire at offensive line coach of McFarland is going to help. Instead of getting a recruiter at that position, Coach Holtz mentioned on a radio interview recently, when you're hiring staff, you've got to get some recruiters, some teachers. And this guy has been an offensive line coach for 30 years and intermixed in there. He was a head coach for a while and offensive coordinator for a while, but he's going to take this group of mostly juniors and try to mold them into a unit for 2 years. But at the same time, take this group of freshmen and mold them so in 2 or 3 years, they're ready to see the field. And they needed a teacher at offensive line more than anything.
Before you go, appreciate you coming, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio tonight. Good stuff as always.
It was fun.
Aaron Dietrich wanted me to remind everybody they will be live from Neville High School in the morning on the morning drive. Make sure you tune in and check that out. Lots of good players from Neville moving on to the next level. So,
and a scary good one next year.
Yeah, Rashard Lewis is a monster. Rashard Lawrence, sorry. I was close. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll be back right after this. A little basketball talk here on the show. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Jared, we didn't allow you to give your grade. We were talking about that right before the break.
Yeah, we were talking about it right before the break. Before we get back into the show, let's go over those sponsors, though. Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7, brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. You can use Twitter to tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll get to them on the air. Before the news of Courtney Wallace came out, and really before TJ King contacted you today and said that he would be coming to Louisiana Tech.
And I said this on our message boards today. As far as TJ King goes, he's one of those guys that I almost don't even believe it until I see the ink dry.
Sure, yeah, and that's understandable. I think all of us would like to just go ahead and get that ink on the paper so it's a done deal and we can stop going back and forth with whether or not TJ is going to UTSA or Louisiana Tech. Or
I bet UTSA feels the same way.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. But regardless, assuming that TJ does go ahead and come to Tech, and then, of course, Courtney Wallace was announced by Aaron Dietrich just a few moments ago, I wasn't going to give this class an A. I wasn't giving an A minus either, because there's still a big need at the defensive line on defensive line for Louisiana Tech, especially after this coming season. And this class really hadn't addressed that. But then, of course, assuming TJ King signs, and then you get a guy like Courtney Wallace, well, then I have to think this class is probably an A minus.
And you present a good point. I mean, I think that they're okay for a year at defensive line, and I think they'll probably find a fifth-year transfer on D-line.
So they very well could.
And maybe I'm projecting too much. That's what all this is.
Sure. Well, it's all projection because you don't know until they start playing. And a lot of these guys, you're going to forget about a lot of these kids. Once signing day is over and you get into this spring practices and stuff, you're going to be looking at those guys who can contribute right away. And then in the fall, you're going to think of a couple of them, because a couple of them are going to be able to get on the field immediately. But then most of them are going to have – they're going to be redshirt freshmen by the time they start playing, and you're already going to be looking at who's coming in the next season. And so some of these kids are going to forget about until they make an impact in the next couple of seasons. And then you remember, oh, yeah, those guys on Bleed Tech Blue said this kid was going to be good.
Those guys are geniuses.
Well, some of
us. Before we move on to basketball, a quick plug. Make sure you come check out BleedTechBlue.com throughout the day tomorrow. You guys, you and Jason will be locked on in it. I'll have a behind the scenes story tomorrow afternoon from at Tech. They've given myself and Sean Isabella access to never before behind the scenes access to signing day. I'm actually really looking forward to the opportunity, and I thank Tech for it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You'll have an opportunity to see what it's like behind the scenes. Jason Jones and I, of course, will be on the other side of it, trying to keep up with as much information as possible and looking for those surprises. It's hard to say whether or not there will be or there won't be, but you got to be prepared for it regardless.
Got to scour the Twitter machine and the interwebs.
Yeah, absolutely. And Twitter, Twitter is a gold mine of information as far as this kind of stuff is concerned.
It's crazy.
You know, last year, to prepare for signing day, boy, I followed a bunch of different people on Twitter, and that was where I got pretty much all of the information that I needed, because they're right there and it's instantaneous. And then, of course, right afterwards, you got to keep that follower to following ratio right. You go unfollow all those people that you just followed. So,
Without a doubt. And Jason, recanting now, I'm going solid A now with an addition of Wallace and possibly King, and also no JUCOs.
Right. Well, no JUCOs is the biggest thing. That may be what is the most impressive part of this recruiting class, which is part of the reason why I did grade it as high as I did, because in recent years at Tech, that just hasn't happened. Recruiting is the lifeblood of the athletic programs, and when you've got kids that are going to be coming in, and these kids are, I mean, they're character kids too. you got to think that you've got to be, you know, you got to be really happy with no stopgap measures at any positions, 2 year fill ins, that type of deal. So it'll definitely be interesting to keep up with tomorrow and watch.
Moving on to basketball, big road trip for the Bulldogs this week as they head to UAB and Middle Tennessee. And neither one of those will be easy.
No, especially not with the trouble that UAB gave them at home. That UAB team is young. They're fiery. They shoot the ball pretty well. But Tech, that'll be a fun game.
But at the same time, Tech wasn't playing particularly well at that point of the season.
No, I agree. They weren't. But I think Louisiana Tech was able to kind of turn a corner with that Marshall game, with, you know, falling behind and all, and having to come back from what was their, you know, largest home deficit so far this season. I mean, they were down 22-9 and then went on what was around a 31-9 run, or 31-10 run, something like that, and really blew the doors off of it. And you've been saying this, and I have to give you credit. I give credit where credit is due. And before the season ever started, we were talking about the dunk contest and all of this stuff that Louisiana Tech was preparing to have. And you mentioned Merle Holden. And you said that you thought that Merle Holden was probably one of the best additions to this team and was one of the most athletic guys that we're going to play. I disagreed. I said it would be Xavien Stapleton. Now, Stapleton certainly hasn't had a bad season, but Merle Holden gives you everything that you want in a big man. And there's no...
He leaves nothing on the floor.
I'm absolutely tired of watching fake hustle. And Mike Kaiser gives you a ton of fake hustle.
He sure does swat a lot of shots, though.
Well, I mean, of course, he does. He swats a lot of shots. And I'm not taking anything from Mike. Mike's been really good for Louisiana Tech. But Mike doesn't try as hard to get the rebound unless it's on the floor going away from him. He's obviously got no shot, but he needs to show the coaches that he's trying, so he gets on the floor.
Wow.
And this fake hustle.
No holds barred here.
Fake hustle. Well, no. It was not as evident. Here's the deal. And I say that because it was not as evident before Merle Holden started playing and showed you what happens whenever you keep a solid base and you go up for a rebound.
In Kaiser's defense a little bit, Merle outweighs Kaiser by 30
pounds. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
And Kaiser has tried his hardest for 4 years to put on poundage.
Sure, sure. No.
And believe it or not, I bet he's 20 pounds heavier than when he got here.
Probably so. And you know, a guy who could stand to gain about 20 lbs? Janiah White.
Janiah White could stand to gain 75.
Yeah.
No. I've got 75 I could donate to the cause if he needs it.
Yeah. Well.
And I bet John's got 25 that he could donate as well. And we can get him 100.
There you go. Janiah, if you're listening, I've got some weight for you right here. No, I've been very, very impressed with Merle Holden. And then another thing is that the bench scored points this weekend, and that was the biggest deal. Louisiana Tech had 28 points off the bench against Marshall. They hadn't gotten but 18 in the past three games combined. So you get 28 off the bench, and that's without Kedar Davis. Kedar Davis not coming off the bench participating. That's guys like Jacoby Boykins, Deion Griffin, of course Holden, and Xavien Stapleton stepping in and making baskets. And they were able to stay out there longer because they were playing defense. That's something that before Mike White didn't leave them out there for as long because he wasn't as comfortable with them on the defensive side of the basketball. But they've really taken to the defensive side. And Jacoby Boykins played good defense. Deion Griffin played good defense. Now, I will say that Deion Griffin, still at this point, not the ball handler that you brought him in to be. Not yet. And he's young, and he's inexperienced, and he's just now finally getting some minutes in games, and so I won't hold that against him. But Deion Griffin has shown to be a good shooter. Jacoby Boykins has shown to be a good shooter. He can make plays. He gets to the free throw line, and he's playing defense. Now, of course, I still think that there's a good chance that Alex Hamilton will ultimately end up being, when you think of these four guys with Speedy Smith, with Mike Kaiser, with Raheem Appleby, and with Alex Hamilton, at the end of next season, I think you end up looking back at this and saying Alex Hamilton was the best of all four.
I've been saying it for 2 years.
I agree.
Right now, he's the best player on the team.
Alex Hamilton is playing very, very well. And I thought that
he's shooting a three ball better than he ever has.
And I thought he would take a step back with Raheem being healthy. But those two guys have actually been able to really coexist. And then this weekend, you looked at a guy like Speedy Smith taking control and looking for his own shot more than he has at any point of his career. This weekend alone, he took shots, and he was named Conference USA Player of the Week because of it. He averaged 11.5 points a game, 12 assists a game, and 6.5 rebounds. And he had 12 points. He had 12 points, 12 assists, and 8 rebounds against Marshall. And Jason Jones just said that it's speedy because of his intangibles. I'm not going.
He makes it go. I mean, there's no doubt that speedy makes the offense go. I mean, there's no arguing that. But I'm talking about pure talent standpoint.
It's still Alex Hamilton, and I think Alex Hamilton can make that. I think Alex Hamilton has the ability to make that offense go when speedy is not on the floor.
But MVP of the team is speedy. But that doesn't necessarily mean he's the best player.
No, it doesn't necessarily mean he's the best. It just means he's the most valuable to the team, and I will agree with that. Because who are you going to replace if you remove Speedy from that lineup? Who gives you what he gives you?
No one.
There's no one else on the team that does that. Is Alex Hamilton the best player on the team? I think so.
Yep.
And there's three sides to the game that you have to think of whenever you look at it. That it's offense, defense, and then obviously mentally. And Alex Hamilton brings all of that to the table. Night in and night out.
Well, this is it. Tomorrow, National Signing Day. Check out BleedTechBlue.com for all the latest as the signings come through. For Jason Jones, Jared King, John Tabor on the ones and the twos and the threes, I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Come check us out. I'm Glenn, BleedTechBlue.com. We'll be back right after this.
Been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday.